हरिः ॐ सहनवावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, page 3, chapter, Bhakti Rasamrita, chapter 14, devotional qualifications. Verse 1-2-49. Because jnana and vairag generally make the heart harsh, the authoritative devotees have concluded that bhakti alone, whose nature is very tender, is the cause of entering into bhakti. Footnote 1. Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti Thakura writes in Madhurya Kadambini, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11:28, it is stated, Yadrishaya mat katadau jata shradhas tuya puman na nirvino nati shakto bhakti yogo sya siddhidha. Bhakti has been described by the word yadrishaya, or own volition. Again, in Sridhar Swami's commentary on this verse, he writes that bhakti is free to act at will. The dictionary meaning of the word yadrishchaya is spontaneous and independent. Some persons interpret the meaning of yadrishchaya as a sort of luck or fortune, but when explained in this way, there are bound to be apparent fallacies, right? Because then what is this fortune or luck based on? Right? Because if it's not based on Krishna or his energies, you know, just because luck means, you know, it's coming from lucky, right? Which is the Bengali pronunciation of Lakshmi. So, but the point is that means she's controlled by the Lord. So it sounds good. Yes, by luck it happens. And in other words, I don't really have to do anything. You know, I don't have to surrender. I don't have to be sincere. Just by luck it happens. And isn't that fabulous? You know, isn't it wonderful? For example, is this fortune because of pious activities, or misfortune because of impious acts, or simply a lack of good action? If we accept that good fortune as a result of pious activities creates bhakti, then it makes the bhakti dependent upon and subservient to pious activities. In other words, the explanation infringes upon the principle of bhakti's free will. We agree to the other suggestion that lack of good fortune gives birth to bhakti, then we admit that such fortunes are capricious, unpredictable, and therefore imperfect. How can the imperfect produce anything that is perfect? Right? Because by mode of ignorance, well, that may be. You know, they just—it's just thrown out there. So you could think like that. And is that? Yeah. Yes. And if one says that the Supreme Lord's mercy is the ultimate cause of bhakti, then one has to again undergo tedious research to pinpoint the cause of his mercy. It is certain that after much probing and speculation, a single irrefutable cause will not be established. In following this line of thought, confusion reigns. On the other hand, if we agree that bhakti impregnates the devotee's heart as a result of Krishna's causeless mercy, then understanding this becomes easier. Yet one may raise the question as to why the Lord's mercy often seems to be unequally dispensed. Is the Supreme Lord guilty of partiality? If the Lord's grace is causeless, then he must shower it everywhere without consideration. But it is seen that his mercy is not freely given to all. Should we blame Krishna for being biased or even unfair? The open discrimination the Lord practices against the demons by killing him, and the favor he shows towards his devotees, does not tarnish the Lord's reputation, but rather becomes an embellishment in his character. Krishna's quality of bhakti vatsala, his protective affection towards the devotee, surpasses his other transcendental excellences. The 8th chapter will deal with this point in detail. It is frequently pointed out that the pure devotee's mercy is also the cause of devotion. Just as the Lord's mercy is known to be causeless, so is devotees, who possess the same qualities as the Lord, also shower the causeless mercy. Hence, when we declare that the devotee's causeless mercy is the reason which inspires bhakti, but that bhakti is not being equally distributed, naturally this will be criticized as partiality. Though it is wrong to say that the causeless mercy of both the Lord and the pure devotee is prejudiced, we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.46, the Madhyamadikari offers his love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a sincere friend of all the devotees of the Lord, shows mercy to ignorant people who are innocent, and disregards those who are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These characteristics clearly indicate that the Madhyamadikari, devotee, does not distribute his mercy equally to everyone. The truth is that the Supreme Lord is subservient to his devotee's wishes. Therefore, he emulates his devotee in distributing mercy. Based on this fact, it is easy to see that if the Madhyam devotee is merciful to someone, the Lord automatically showers his mercy on that recipient. This conclusion is sound in all respects. The single cause that attracts the mercy of the Lord is the bhakti that permanently resides in the pure devotee's heart. In other words, Krishna's mercy will not be invoked without the bhakti within the heart of the devotee, which attracts his mercy to appear in the first place. Therefore, because bhakti is completely independent, even from previous piety and good fortune, it is indisputably confirmed that bhakti is self-manifest. As mentioned earlier, devotion is the only cause of devotion. Bhakti Devi does not require any cause or reason to appear other than her own sweet will. Because we have to appreciate the transcendental position of the Lord, the devotees, in devotional service. Otherwise, if we don't, then it has to be due to karma or jnana. And karma jnana is only knowledge of this world, you know, being produced from the modes of nature through the 24 elements. None of that has anything to do with the soul. It's one of the Lord's energies, but it's not our energy. It's not are connected to us, but it's all connected to Krishna. Therefore, Krishna then expanding everything, then it has to be coming from him. Right? And for him, he's Atmarama, he's self-satisfied. But he expands his energies so that he interacts with the devotees. So as the devotees, they're absorbed in the Lord, and they deal in how they deal, as was given the Madhyamadikara. Then they're giving this mercy to those who are innocent and those who are not inimical towards the Lord. And then the Lord's mercy follows that. That's why it's such a problem if we offend the devotees. Because Krishna's mercy is following them. It's not separate. He's independent. But his will follows that of the devotees. And the devotees are only trying to please Krishna. So they're only absorbed in Krishna. So that leaves, I say, bhakti does not have a basis in anything material. So there is no material solution to be found in the cause of the Lord's mercy. It is simply that the devotees are there. That's why it's so important the devotees are going out. They're contacting people. They're doing these programs. They're doing harinams. They're doing festivals. Because then only they'll contact these individuals. Because these individuals aren't interested in the Lord. Only by contacting devotees they become interested. And that interest, then when the devotees has that kindness, then the Lord's mercy follows that. And then they develop that faith or that interest in Krishna. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. It is the opinion of expert devotees that mental speculation and the artificial austerities of yoga practice may be favorable for becoming liberated from material contamination. But they will also make one's heart harder and harder. They will not help at all in the progress of devotional service. These processes are therefore not favorable for entering into the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Actually, Krishna consciousness, devotional service itself, is the only way of advancing in devotional service. Devotional service is absolute. It is both the cause and the effect. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause and effect of all that be. And to approach Him, the absolute, the process of devotional service, which is also absolute, has to be adopted. Right? Because karma and jnana aren't absolute. Right? Any authority or any position they had is simply because of Krishna. How much He's empowered it, how much He's given qualities to it, what is its nature. But it's not absolute. So the Lord and bhakti, that's absolute. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 18:55 by the Lord Himself. Quote, "One can understand me only through devotional service." End quote. In beginning his teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord said to Arjuna, "Because you are my devotee, I shall teach these secrets to you." End quote. Vedic knowledge means ultimately to understand the Supreme Lord, and the process of entering into His kingdom is devotional service. That is accepted by all authentic scriptures. Mental speculators neglect the process of devotional service, and by simply trying to defeat others in philosophical research, they fail to develop the ecstasy of devotion. Because they're thinking through the intellect they'll find everything, but that the intellect is dry. Right? And the more austere you come, the more you pull back from the material energy, just the drier they become, the harder their hearts become. So it's not favorable to bhakti. Right? But bhakti is not a sentimental approach on the material platform, because karma doesn't work either. So, you know, it's, if jnana's not working, karma's not working. So it has to be coming from the transcendental platform. It has to be independent to this material platform. It means the energies of the Lord are independent from the material energy, but they're not independent from the Lord. So as they're moving, the Lord is following these energies. But it's His will to do like that. That's the point. It's His freedom. Yes.
But now, it seems quite easy to follow, but if you are not in parampara...
If you're not in parampara, you're in the material platform, so it'll never work.
See,
yeah, it's just like you're going to have unlimited machines, but they won't work unless you plug them in. So it's not like, no, if we get more and more machines, at some point then they'll, you know, create critical mass, and then you'll have this ultimate point of knowledge, and then everything will be revealed, and then they'll take on their own life force and everything like that, and then they can start a franchise of Star Trek or something. Right? So it doesn't work like that. Yeah, it said that they're using this basis for all these different things. They're taking dead matter, and somehow or another, if you get enough knowledge connected with it, it takes on something. You know, it takes on a life of it. It means all these basis of that is they're thinking that this is what's going to happen. Knowledge is the ultimate. If you know, right, then you'll become, you know, one with everything. You know, and you do nothing, but the wall's been doing that forever, so how is that an improvement? So in other words, the end of knowledge is to become a wall. Right? Or as some poets say, a brick in the wall. Right? So that's the problem, is that they're using their material intelligence and they're coming up with all these speculative things. But they have nothing to do with, so it's only when you contact the parampara, then the chit potency descending from the spiritual world, that contact then makes the things work. That's the real life. Otherwise, Krishna, yes, through His energies, is giving life to all the things here. But it's on the material platform, because it's not connecting the soul. See? Srila Jiva Goswami. This verse speaks of another fault in being attached to jnana and vairag. Right? Because that's what we have to understand here, is the point is this about jnana and vairag. We have to give up that attachment. That is what's going to make everything work and everything become perfect. So we have to appreciate how bhakti is independent of this karma and jnana. That's essential. Right? Because if we talk about how, you know, the rasa and this and that, then, you know, we may not take that either. You know what I'm saying? Then it's karma, or it's good activity, or... We just have to give up that it's karma, jnana. based on that logic. Once that's accepted, then you can talk about Krishna's subjective nature. In jnana, they cause hardness in the heart. In jnana, one must deliberate on the truth by defeating a variety of other philosophies. And in vairagya, one must renounce enjoyment by repeated toleration of suffering. The very nature of these practices is harsh or unpleasant. And thus the heart becomes similarly harsh. This is the opposite of sweetness and softness of the heart that we see in bhakti. But how can a person enter into higher and higher stages of bhakti without some sort of assistance? Right? That's the question. So the answer is given. Bhakti is said to be the cause of entering bhakti. And previous acts of bhakti alone are the cause of entering into higher stages of bhakti. Right? So it is, we're just walking down the street, then the devotees, with the desire to please the Supreme Lord, they're out doing Harinam. Mm. Then you contact bhakti. Mm. So then by their grace and the Lord's mercy following that, then now you've started that process. Mm. And then just that, if there's an interest in that, then that'll just build again and again. You'll contact until it comes to the point of faith, and then continuing that, it'll continue. So it's only by performing bhakti does bhakti grow. No karma, no jnana. Good. But bhakti also will become a cause of hardening the heart, since perfection can be reached only by effort. So the answer is given. This bhakti, by its very nature, is extremely tender, because it consists solely of thinking of the Lord's sweet form, qualities, and pastimes. Therefore, the conclusion is that bhakti should be performed with the desire to make the heart melt in relation to the Lord. The distinguished devotee, Pallad, has stated with emphasis, neither the three modes of material nature nor the predominating deities controlling these three modes, nor the five gross elements, nor the mind, nor the demigods, nor the human beings can understand your lordship, for they are all subjected to birth and annihilation. Considering this, the spiritually advanced have taken to devotional service. Such wise men hardly bother with Vedic study. Instead, they engage themselves in practical devotional service. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.49. Means they're reading the books on devotional service, but that itself is devotional service. They're not studying the scriptures to try to analyze, you know, what is the Veda saying and this and that. They're reading in connection with bhakti. That's why all these other things, if you just study Bhagavatam, then you're doing okay. So Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.49. Therefore, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, the best of all persons, to whom prayers are offered, without rendering six kinds of devotional service unto you, offering obeisances to you, prayers, menial service, deity worship, remembering your pastimes and hearing about your glories, who can achieve devotion to you, the goal of the Paramahamsas? Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.50. Yes. In the second verse quoted, the word karma, nama shruti karma pujaha, refers to paricharya, treating the Lord as a king. Karma smriti charanayoho means remembrance of the pastimes of the lotus feet of the Lord. Charanayoho is related to all the six items in the list and indicates the devotion of the speaker. Without these six types of service, some say vaya vina iti, how can a person attain bhakti? Vairagya and jnana are not mentioned at all in this statement. Right? So that, you know, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping the deity, and offering prayers. These are the six. Remember the last three, those are moods of advancement.
Yes, yes.
Like that. The other six are practical services rendered. Right? So, yes. And then that can be done in any of these three levels of moods, right? So, yes, so his point is bhakti is not mentioned. He even said that the Vedic study, they don't even bother with it. They just absorb themselves in devotional service. So hearing and chanting about the Lord's glories, that's what they're doing. Not studying Vedic literature to become knowledgeable. Yes.
Maharaj, any the person, whoever is non-devotee, so how can he be able to come to the right parampara?
Because he has to have the desire to, that he actually wants to know what the absolute truth.
So
it means that even in the small, it's just they want to know what's going on, why. And Krishna will put them in contact. Whether they take it seriously or not, that's another thing. But, you know, and it's just like, you see, in any of these temples and things like that, they're there. You know, it's not, people go from one side of the city to another without any problem for something mundane. Right? But, you know, then if it's, you know, then we can say, no, but there's only one temple. They'll go all the way on the other side for some little hole-in-the-wall cafe or something. Right? So that's it, you know. It's like Madras. Tinagar's kind of in the middle, right? Yeah, so the temple was there for, like, forever. You know, people can easily go there. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of, if they're interested, they'll contact. Because Krishna's in the heart, he'll arrange it. But if they're not interested, they won't. So it's only then the devotees. So that's Lord Chaitanya's anxiety. And that was the Dvaitacharya's point. Is that he's there, he's the Supreme Lord, he's Mukunda, he can deliver everyone. But unfortunately, the souls aren't interested. And Krishna, he reciprocates according to how they deal with him. So since they're only dealing with him as karma and jnana, he's only reciprocating as karma and jnana. No one's approaching as in bhakti. So therefore, then what to do? Right? So it's only the devotees. They'll approach even though you're not making so much of an endeavor. Right? Does that make sense? So, you have an interest, you contact, even if not, the devotees will just make it happen. But why is there an interest? It's because you have contacted the devotees. So that's why it's causeless mercy. There's no reason for it.
So mainly, Chetiguri is the one who is guiding.
He's making the arrangement, but who you're contacting is the devotees. So, we can see is that the devotees, they may have that desire to go out and do Harinam, even if there's nobody qualified on the street to hear it. They'll go out and perform. And by that, then, because they want the individuals out there to become, benefited, then by Krishna's grace, they get Agyata Sukriti. Is that? Okay. Because the point is the Lord's independent, and the devotees take on that character that they distribute. That's why the Madhyamadikari is the central point of Lord Chaitanya's mission. Yes. Right? Not the Uttam, not the Kanista.
Yes.
Right? Means Kanistas are supposed to act like Madhyams, and Uttamas act like Madhyams. Difference will be in their realization, of course, but the principles on which you act and function is that of the Madhyamas. So we see is these Uttamadikaris, and they function as Madhyamas and preach and make the distinction on who to preach to and who not to. Right? And then the neophytes, they function in that capacity. Maybe they don't have the realization, but the potency is there. Because it's the chit potency, not us. It's not because I did this fabulous preaching, that's why people respond. No, so I'm trying to serve the Lord, following the instruction of the Acharyas, and so because of that sincerity, then those persons contacted by Krishna's grace, they get benefit. But if we're doing it out of pride, then how are we preaching? So how will the people get benefit? Because if we're proud, we're not giving mercy. So then how will the Lord's mercy follow that? You know, but it's not us, it's that's just how Krishna wants it done. Right? So that's why Lord Chaitanya gave these instructions to Rupa Goswami. And so then from there, then it's handed down. Lord Chaitanya could do it himself, But, you know, the point is that you're expanding the activities of devotional service through the expansion of the devotees. So,
the devotee is like an instrument.
Like an instrument, yes.
Like Krishna.
Yes, but Krishna follows that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like you're stirring something with a spoon. You follow the spoon.
Yes.
Spoon's doing what you want, but you still follow the spoon. You know, you go with the spoon, there's someplace stuck,
yes.
Then you put your energy there.
Yes.
You know, so that's the wonderful thing, is that even though Krishna is independent of the Supreme Lord, he's still following the devotee. But the devotee is just serving the Lord.
Yes.
So that's where all the sweetness is. That's where all this niceness is.
Yes.
You know, that's why it's not the jnana that makes it work. It's that Krishna is reciprocating with that affection of the devotees. So the devotees desire someone's benefit, then that's happening. The Lord's following them. Right? So that's why we can't take advantage of that. Right? We're getting the mercy of the devotees, so therefore then we apply that in our life and try to practice and all that. We don't just try to come and collect how much mercy we can and then do nothing with it. You know, that application means trying to advance. That's why it mentioned there. Yeah. Bhakti is said to be the cause of entering bhakti, and previous acts of bhakti alone are the cause of entering into higher stages of bhakti. Right? So the previous act means that's a jñāta sukriti. We don't know it's bhakti. It's just we're following the devotees. Then with time we have that faith, then it starts becoming now bhakti. But it's the previous act of bhakti that brings us to bhakti, and then by what performance we perform now, that takes us to higher and higher stages, until that gets to prema.
So, there's only bhakti.
There's only bhakti, yeah, there's nothing else. There's nothing else. That's what I was saying. Here, because bhakti there means you're engaging everything in this service of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, the point is it's this everything is engaged in the Lord's service. But when we're interested in the everything without Krishna, that's material. Does that make sense? So everything's there in the spiritual world. We just take what parts we like and leave the rest. So it's not viable.
Yes.
You know, it's like taking the front, that means the back half of the duck because it lays golden eggs, but the front half, then we don't want anything to do with, so we cut the head off. Because it eats too much and quacks and makes noise.
Yes.
You know, so that's the difficulty. We just take what we like and then it doesn't work. So that's why then we follow what Shastra gives, because that's the nature of something. Everything has this dharma, so you have to consider the whole dharma. Well, we don't. We just consider what we want, and then what little things we can take from everywhere to make it function, which it never functions. Well, if we consider the dharma of everything, then you have to think much broader, and that's why then the whole Vedic system is given, so that one can function within that broader range. Yeah? But that devotion to Krishna, automatically these things are there, because the devotee naturally deals properly with everybody, sees everything and everyone and everything in connection to Krishna. So without all this technical knowledge, they're able to function in this way. So, 1.2.250. In the Bhagavatam it is said, therefore, for a devotee engaged in my loving service with mind fixed on me, the cultivation of knowledge, impersonal, and renunciation is generally not the means of achieving the highest perfection within this world. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.20.31. Srila Prabhupada. The 11th canto, 20th chapter, verse 31 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says, quote, "My dear Uddhava, for persons who are seriously engaged in my service, the cultivation of philosophical speculation and artificial renunciation are not very favorable. When a person becomes my devotee, he automatically attains the fruits of the renunciation of material enjoyment. and he gets sufficient knowledge to understand the absolute truth. Right? Because knowledge, that's what people are trying to find out, is the absolute truth. You're getting the knowledge about the absolute truth anyway. So what's the point of the other knowledge? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let us say, okay, everybody touches their nose by taking their hand and putting it all the way around the back of their neck and their head and then touching their nose. And then someone else goes, but you can just touch it like this. No, you have to do it like this and that. No, it's just, you know, because it's all the touching, it's all to do with like the bending of the arm and the elbow and the angle and all this and that. And so that's the difficulty that comes up, is that even though it's, you only need knowledge of the absolute truth to know the absolute truth, but it's think, no, through speculation and pious works, then we'll know. But the reason that we're involved in those is because we don't want to know the absolute truth, because the absolute truth is there. But we want to know about the secondary things without the absolute. So that's not an interest in absolute. Right? So even the jnanis, they're trying for liberation. All this knowledge and liberation is only to get out of the misery of trying to enjoy the material world without Krishna. So it's not that it stands on its own as a glorious position. It's just that it's just sour grapes. Right? They couldn't get at the grapes. They tried their best. They couldn't enjoy anything. So, oh, the grapes are sour. So then they renounce. But the point is they renounce something that they were that's not theirs and that they're trying to enjoy and they were unable to enjoy. You understand? So, trying to enjoy someone else's property, that's not that glorious. And then, having tried to enjoy that, then to renounce it, but not back to the person that it belongs to, just that you're not going to deal with it, and by not dealing with it, now you'll be happy. How are these two positions have any glory? That's the difficulty.
If we don't have to accept Krishna as God, we are forced to go into this.
Yes. Like that. We will always go into these things. Because that is why we've come to the material world, to deal with God's energies without God. And for some who are intelligent, then they'll understand, okay, it's God's energy, and it works by God's will, so therefore I'll approach God so that I can enjoy His energy. You know, it's more honest than the person who tries to enjoy the energy and doesn't attribute it to God, or even says it's not God's, you know. It just happens by chance, right? So that's... Because if it was by chance, then technically any formula that is there in science, by chance, could be the formula. Right? So the whole academy is based on, it's not by chance. It's by patterns of coming from observation. And so then to say, it ultimately it's by chance. If it's by chance, then what is the meaning of any of these formulas? Today they're working, tomorrow they won't work. You know, if it's just by chance they're functioning, then after that they change. Otherwise, why isn't they haven't just followed their formulas back and found something? Because then it was changed. It was different before. Okay. Does that make sense? You know, so now that, you know, E equals MC squared, you know, before it was, M equals E, EC squared. You know, and another time was, E equals MC cubed. You know, I mean, it just keeps changing because it's by chance, you know. Why does it have to be squared at all? Just E equals MC. Yeah, that's the whole point, is that they're working on the thing. It has to be consistent. There has to be laws of nature. It has to be stable. But at the same time, they're saying it's just happening by chance. So this is really not well thought out. So simply because they can't figure it out, and then to say it by chance so you can bewilder the common person so the common person doesn't think that they're so stupid, claiming to be so intelligent, but they still know nothing. And then pointing out how, oh, but look at all the nice things that have come out of all this. Yes, but the intelligent people, the scientists didn't come up with one of those. That a businessman came up with. Literally. You know, they say, oh, but you know, we have the planes, we have the telephones, we have the television. And not one of those was put together by a scientist. It was put together by people who have money. You could say, no, but they're sitting there in, you know, MIT and doing all these things. And yeah, and who's paying them? You know, and as soon as they figure it out, then it becomes something. They can't do it. They can't put it together. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. So they're claiming that they're benefiting everybody, but at the same time, have they? You know, I think it's what is it? Interesting thing. They go up with a thing. You know, you have the whatever it is, and then you have Edge, and then you have 3G, then 4G, 5G. I think, from what I can understand, is everyone's going nuts about 4G, and then you know talking about 5G. But 4G is banned in Europe. They only have 3G. They don't even use 4G because they found it's very bad for people's health and this and that and all kinds of weirdo stuff. You know what I'm saying? So they're saying it's this, but at the same time, is they don't know the nature of something. And you can only follow the path of money. You know what I'm saying? Someone's doing medical research. They can only do research in an area where there's money. They don't give... It's just like... How do you say? Rabies. You know the animals, dogs have, or bats, or like this, you get bitten and you get the disease. So they had a system that they worked out, like, I don't know what, 100, 150 years ago, of all these injections that they have to inject into your stomach around the navel, like something like 12 shots or something ridiculous like that. And it's exactly the same. It didn't develop in 100 years, 150 years. It's the exact same thing. All the other things are developing. Why? Because those make money. How many people get rabies? I think it's only recently now, in the last some 5-10 years, they've come up with some newer kind of things that aren't so drastic. So it's just where there's money. So everyone's saying, oh, it's the science, it's the knowledge. No, it's just money. There's no money to make off of it. Who's going to be sitting around and doing that? Right? A few people may do, but are they getting anywhere? You know, so that's the difficulty, is that there's a dead end in these kind of things, is that you're taking matter and trying to figure out where it comes from. Like I take this rock, and by analyzing this rock, I'll figure out where it came from. You know what I'm saying? But then I have to analyze everything here and there, and I can't analyze everything, so I won't fully know. You know what I'm saying? So if I say, you know, oh, but this rock, the nature of it, it comes from this place, there's this kind of thing, and this mountain has that, because somebody's observed it. But then the same point is, how do you know that there's not another mountain where it came from? How do you know aliens didn't bring it? He says, oh, that's not scientific. He says, but it's by chance. The alien is here with their kids, and the kid brought the rock with them. And they're out there playing around and everything like that. Then it's time to go, and they forget the rock and leave it here. And so now we have this rock. So the difficulty comes up is that when we try to figure out the material world from the material world, it can only maximum, as we see by these great thinkers, get up to Padan. And no modern thinkers are getting that far at all. So that's as far as you can get it. They don't, you know, so unless you know Krishna, you don't know what's beyond. So it's only by when the chit potency entering into the material world through the devotees, you know, by the Lord's grace, then when it comes contact, and one can know the Absolute. So therefore, this chit potency is all one requires to know the Absolute. You don't need to back it up with all this mundane knowledge. Because the mundane knowledge can only take you up to a point. So that knowledge that's coming from beyond the chit, that's all you require. So this whole idea, no, we have to have all this, then we can get to know. That's the whole point. Bhakti is independent.
After every some years, about 100 scientists get together and they try to find out what is the age of the universe.
Age.
So in their research paper, they openly write that our observation was very close to our calculation.
But they don't say what it is.
It's open block.
Yeah. Open block. Yeah, and with these guys, you know, billions of years, trillions of years difference doesn't make much. You know, the farther you take it back, then you're off this much, it doesn't matter.
They never say that we don't know, sorry.
And they can't say, because if they do say, then right there, then what is their position? They have no position. Because people have faith because they have such attitude. If they were honest, then who'd care? You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. So only if you're being trained in culture, then cultured people may appreciate that one knows how much we know, but then where does this absolute come from? So that has to come from higher sources. It has to come from the absolute platform. And so if you have the absolute, that knowledge, then you can understand these things. But the point is they're only trying to understand this, because their idea is if they understand the beginning of the universe or where it started from, then they'll understand everything. But the point is those protozoa are there now. Right? It's supposed to be is, you know, you have the primordial soup, then a lightning bolt hits the primordial soup, and then the protozoa start, you know, moving and that, and then splitting and all that. But protozoa are there now, so then... So that's the...
Interestingly, chemists are worried about the primordial soup. Biologists are worried from the protozoa itself.
Yes.
And there's no connection between...
And then the nuclear physicists are, when did it start? Yeah, so nobody can get it. But it keeps them busy and it keeps... In other words, it pays the bills. It pays the bills.
Prabhupada put it, they are drawing fatty salary and bluffing everybody.
Yes.
Darwin never showed us a monkey which has given birth to a man.
No. There are examples of men giving birth to monkeys. That's there. You know? That makes sense, you know. Parents and friends are all the time talking about how this kid's a monkey. You know, even donkeys, they give birth to donkeys, you know. Like that, yeah. Srila Prabhupada, in 11th canto, 20th chapter, verse 31 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says, "My dear Uddhava, for persons who are seriously engaged in my service, the cultivation of philosophical speculation and artificial renunciation are not very favorable. When a person becomes my devotee, he automatically attains the fruits of the renunciation of material enjoyment, and he gets sufficient knowledge to understand the absolute truth." End quote. That is the test of advancement in devotional service. Devotee cannot be in darkness, because the Lord shows him special favor and enlightens him from within. Footnote 2. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. Bhagavad Gita 10:11. So ignorance of the position with the Lord, that darkness, then all material karma and jnana is based on that. So that's the point. So when you connect to the Lord, then all these, the knowledge and these activities connected to the Lord, then they're in contact with, they take on that absolute nature. 1:2, 2:51. However, the goals of jnana and vairagya and other processes are achieved by bhakti alone. So even without them, bhakti attains them. Because they're from bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? 1:2, 2:52, and 3. Thus it is said in Bhagavatam, everything that can be achieved by fruit of activities. Penance, knowledge, detachment, mystic yoga, charity, religious duties, and all other means of perfecting life is easily achieved by my devotee through loving service unto me. If somehow or another my devotee desires promotion to heaven, liberation, or residence in my abode for service, he easily achieves such benedictions. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:20, 32, and 33. Srila Prabhupada, in the 11th canto, 20th chapter, verses 32 and 33 of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord further instructs Uddhava, quote, "My dear Uddhava, the profits derived from fruit of activities, austerities, the culture of philosophical knowledge, renunciation, the practice of mystic yoga, charity, and all similar auspicious activities are automatically achieved by my devotees, those who are simply attached to me by loving service. These devotees have everything at their disposal, but they desire nothing outside of my devotional service. If ever a devotee should desire some material profit, like promotion of the heavenly planets or some spiritual profit, to go to the Vaikunthas, by my causeless mercy, his desires are very easily fulfilled." Footnote 3. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these. And at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Bhagavad Gita 8:28. Because Krishna is the origin, Krishna is everything, therefore if you have Krishna, you have everything. So you have Krishna through bhakti, that means bhakti, then through that everything else is available. Right? So there's no need of anything separate. That faith, that's important. That's why it's making this point again and again. Because if you have that faith, that will then, you'll move forward, that will destroy the anarthas that get in the way of our appreciating bhakti. Srila Jiva Goswami. Itarai Shreyo Bhi. By other processes that aim at the highest goal, means, by quote, by bhakti mixed with desires for saloki, etc., end quote. Katan chit yadi vanchati, means, if a person desires things which are useful for serving in devotion. Examples are Chitraketu enjoying in his airplane given by the Lord, Sukadev desiring to reject Maya, and Prahlad desiring to live near the Lord. Right? So the situations that are favorable for serving Krishna. Does that make sense? But the point is, it's just that devotion to Krishna itself will provide all these things. Because it's not that he just wants to live near the Lord and that's all, because it's just, the Lord lives in the coolest place, so I want to live near the Lord. Right, so it's about the Lord. They want to be always with the Lord, to serve the Lord, to be absorbed in the Lord. So then, naturally, you might think like this. So these things, these just come as side aspects of bhakti. Right, the main central point is Krishna. Thus, it is said in the sixth canto, Reme Vidyadhara Shribhir Gapayan Harim Ishwaram. Chitraketu enjoyed life with the women of Vididhara Loka by chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord, Hari. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17.3. In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Sukadev prays to the Lord, "O Madhava, your Maya, like chains binding the whole universe, is most difficult to overcome by all beings. If that Maya will not bind me, I will give up this womb and enter the world right now. You are the constant assurance of this. Mm-hmm. For this, please tell me." Okay. Yes, because he's in the womb and it's not coming out. Because he says if it comes out, it'll be overcome by all the Maya. He's inside and said, what's going to bother you then? "You are the constant assurance for this. Please tell me." So if Krishna says you'll be free, then he'll come out. And if he says no, there's always a chance that he won't.
How many years?
16. In the 17th, 7th canto, Prahlad says,
Can we say that when he came, Sukhini was a bird?
Maybe. You have to remember, it is Vyasadeva's kid. Right? Vyasadeva is the Supreme Lord. But for this pastime, he brings Krishna, because he's not able to convince him. In the seventh canto, Prahlad says, O most desirable object, who are kind to the fallen souls, I have been put into the association of demons as a result of my activities, and therefore I am very much afraid of my condition of life within this material world. When will that moment come when you will call me to the shelter of your lotus feet, which is the ultimate goal for liberation from conditional life? Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.16. I am afraid of the terrible suffering, kadanad, of the wheel of samsara, because it is difficult to endure. I have been thrown, pranita, to the devouring demons. O most desirable object, Ushatama, being pleased with me, then will you call me to the eternal position at your lotus feet, te angri mulam, to Vaikuntha. Oh, so you see, it's because of his absorption in Krishna, then these secondary aspects are being brought in to express it. It's not about the secondary. That's the whole point of connecting religion through Naishkarmya to Krishna, is that we start with the religion and the benefits you get, then we connect that to Krishna. So there's detachment, there's all these things. But here it's starting with Krishna. It's because of Krishna, then they have these different moods and desires are there. 1.2.254. If a person has a taste for worshipping the Lord, even if he has strong material attractions, those attractions will be, for the most part, destroyed during sadhana without resorting to vairagya. Right? Just the means someone has material desires and material attractions. These will go away just by the sadhana, because by becoming more and more attracted to Krishna, these things just go away. So there's not necessarily the resorting to vairagya. You know, like someone's, let's say, comfortable in household life. So it's by performance of sadhana that they'll lose their interest in family life. Not by, you know, going out in the backyard and gritting your teeth or something. Does that kind of make sense? That's the whole point. But there's the process, not that they don't help, but they're only useful if they're connected to bhakti. On its own, we see so many have tried this, it didn't work. Right? But when it's connected to bhakti, then it works. So it's the sadhana itself that's going to make it go away. So if in the sadhana part of that practice is renunciation, it'll be used, as because it's part of sadhana. But if it's not, then it'll go by devotional practice. Srila Prabhupada. Actually, a person who is developing Krishna consciousness and still has some attachment to material enjoyment will soon be freed from such a tendency by regularly discharging devotional service under the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master. So that regularity, then that will start to purify the heart, and one will start to see the difference between. One will see there's no interest in. Srila Jiva Goswami. Previously, vairagya was condemned at the beginning of bhakti because it causes the heart to become hard. However, if vairagya is forbidden, the person practicing bhakti will be filled with material desires. And having such desires is against the scriptures, for it is said, the person absorbed in material enjoyment is far from being absorbed in Krishna. How can a person going east catch an object moving to the west? Right? It means, if you start from one point and you go east and the object that's behind you is going west, you can't catch it. Right? We're not talking about that seventh or sixth grade? You know, even fifth grade, where the train's going in one direction and then the bird's flying in the other direction, and then somebody, you know, throws a book out the window, and then, you know, how many samosas did he eat? You know, one of those ones. Like that. Right? Yes. To answer this dilemma, the author supplies this verse. Having a taste for bhakti will destroy the attachment to material objects. Thus, the hardness of heart caused by practice of vairagya will not take place, because bhakti is going on. And still, detachment will manifest. Right, so you can't be absorbed in Krishna if you're absorbed in Maya. So, but by devotional service, that absorption in Maya goes down, and then you're able to, because you have less taste for Maya, you get more attraction to Krishna. And so then it progresses more. So bhakti is independent. Bhakti produces bhakti. At the stage of ruchi, or taste for bhakti, material attraction will be destroyed for the most part, praya. The meaning is that it will be completely destroyed with the maturation of bhakti. It is not mentioned, but understood from the statement that the taste for bhakti not only produces vairagya, but also jnana. Because then you see things in their proper position. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojitaha. Jana yat yasu vairagyam jnana cha yat ahaitukam. By rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world, Srimad Bhagavatam 127, footnote 5. What was 4? Oh, 4 was about the one going from east to west. According to Bhakti Sandarbha, this is from Vishnu Purana. That mentions that you're going east and what you want is going west behind you in the opposite direction. You're not going to catch it. If you think, well, no, we'll just keep going until we meet up over, you know, like that. And yeah, that doesn't happen. So this one, footnote 5. According to Vishwanath Bhagavatam commentary, jnanam ahaitukam means knowledge without material motivation or without a desire for liberation. Right, so that's the knowledge. It's the knowledge about Krishna, about his service, about his devotees, the relationships. You know, in other words, the Dasa Mool, right, in connection with Krishna. 1.2.255. Ana shaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjata nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchate. The vairagya of that person who employs objects suitable for devotional development while remaining detached from them is said to be suitable for bhakti. The objects should be persistently related to Krishna. That means you have to connect them to Krishna. That means they have to be favorable to Krishna. So only the good qualities of them are what is offered. So then it's recommended what things you can use or what things you can't. Right? Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami then recommends that one should not be attached to material sense enjoyment, but should accept everything enjoyable which is in relationship to Krishna. For example, eating is necessary, and one wants some palatable dishes to satisfy the sense of taste. So in that case, for the satisfaction of Krishna, rather than for the satisfaction of the tongue, some palatable dishes may be prepared and offered to Krishna. Then it is renunciation. Let the palatable dishes be prepared, but unless they are offered to Krishna, one should not accept them for eating. But, you know, they're being prepared, but it's always about being offered to Krishna. Right? Because remember, before it was saying everything's being offered to Krishna. You know, one's body, one's wealth, one's family, one's lust, one's all, whatever it is, it's all connected to Krishna. This vow of rejecting anything which is not offered to Krishna is actually renunciation, right? So that's vairagya. It's in connection with bhakti, with the sadhana, like that. And by such renunciation, one is able to satisfy the demands of the senses. So you engage the senses in Krishna's service. Then you, that engagement that you are interested in is there, but there's also renunciation. There's service and there's purification. There's developing that attraction for Krishna that brings you forward. So it all works very well.
It is not dry.
It is not dry. That's the whole thing. That's why it's saying, because you can say, no, but we need renunciation, we need knowledge. But it's only if it's in connection with Krishna does it work. Renunciation not connected to Krishna won't get you anything. That's the problem. Srila Jiva Goswami. With this verse, the author shows the type of vairagyam which is suitable for entering bhakti, and which was previously mentioned. The vairagya of the person employing upayun jata, material objects only, to the extent that they are favorable for his devotional development, yatartam, while being detached from material enjoyment, is suitable, yuktam, for bhakti. In this, there should be a persistence, nirbanta, in relating the objects to Krishna. So you have to relate it to Krishna. That's why we're relating what is connected to us to Krishna. But then when we give in the process of how to connect it to Krishna, and then we relate it back to ourselves, that's going in the opposite direction. Does that make sense? So, in other words, bhakti is going east, and our idea of following, you know, our mundane identity is going west. One will not catch. 1-2-256. Prapanchi kataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastuna. Mumukshubhi parityago vairagyam falgu katyate. See, the Sanskrit is just being given verses that we know, that Prabhupada is quoting. Rejection of things related to the Lord by persons desiring liberation, who think that these things are simply material objects, is called useless vairagya. Because they're thinking they're simply material objects, but their desire for liberation is mundane, their rejection of them is mundane. Mm-hmm. You know, okay. Srila Jiva Goswami. One should also understand what type of vairagya is unsuitable or useless, falgu, for bhakti. The author thus speaks of vairagya of those opposed to the Lord, which ends in offense. Sambandhi vastu, useful in the service of the Lord, refers to things such as the Lord's food remnants. Rejection of objects related to the Lord is of two types. Not asking for those objects related to the Lord, and rejecting them when offered. One should understand that the second type of rejection becomes an offense. This is stated in Vishnu Yamala. Prasada grahanam Vishnor varjayed Vaishnava sada. The Vaishnav should never refuse the prasada of Vishnu. Quoted in Hari Bhakti Vilas 2.178. Yeah, so... Rejection of objects related to the Lord. One is that you're not interested in them. So in this way, you're not taking advantage. Mm. The other is that when you actually come in contact with them, you reject them. Mm. Like that. So these are not useful. Mm. 1-2-257-258. The daily and periodic duties of Varnashrama and the impersonal aspect of jnana, the obstructive portions of karma and jnana. Have already been rejected as angas of bhakti by using the stated definition of uttama bhakti obtained through the bhakti scriptures. However, in order to make the point clear, the false type of vairagya, the obstructive portion, has been again rejected as an anga of bhakti. By just saying that karma and jnana are rejected, then that means it's done. But here, just to make sure, then the obstructive portion of false vairagya is also again rejected, just in case.
Yes.
Right? Because we might reject, you know, the more pious and it's keep the ones that are obstructive.
It's possible.
Yes. So you just want to make sure. Srila Prabhupada, the impersonalists who try to avoid everything material may undergo severe austerities, but they miss the opportunity of being engaged in the service of the Lord. Thus, their renunciation is not sufficient for perfection. There are many instances where, following such artificial renunciation, without any contact with devotional service, the impersonalist again fell down and become attracted to material contamination. There are many supposed renouncers, even at the present moment, who artificially become sannyasis or renouncers, and outwardly claim that spiritual existence is truth and material existence untrue. In this way, artificially, they make a show of renunciation of the material world. However, because they cannot reach the point of devotional service, they have failed to achieve the goal. Because if you're giving up the world, it's only through devotional service you can do that. The other is an artificial giving it up.
Yes.
They fail to achieve the goal and they again come back to material activities, such as philanthropic work and political agitation. There are many examples of so-called sannyasis who gave up the world as untruth, but again came to the material world. Because they were not seeking their real repose at the lotus feet of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very common. It's just like you think even in the Indian politics, you have two or three who are very famous as, you know, being saintly or renounced and that they wear saffron and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
But they're just, you know, very much absorbed in the political position.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they're detached, live a simple lifestyle, it's still they've fallen from that pursuit of the absolute truth down into politics.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then so many do, philanthropic work,
mm-hmm.
you know, opening, you know, medical kinds of things and yoga and all these things to benefit mankind and all that kind of jazz. So, you know, might have nice medicines, but the point is as far as they themselves, their pursuit of the absolute truth, that will be put on hold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maharaj, it is almost automatic that Mayavati Sannyasi must fall back.
Yes, no, they all. It means except for devotees, all impersonalists will be back. Mayavadis never get there. Brahmavadis may get there, and then now what?
Yes.
You know? But the Mayavadis never actually get there. But, you know, they make their endeavor, but they give up so many things, that there is nothing there, then they'll... Because philanthropy sounds good, it looks good. Everyone will say, oh, yeah, it's a nice thing. You're saying, oh, you know, what's the Swami doing? Oh, he's, you know, doing this for the benefit of mankind. All things, oh, very nice thing. You know, or if he says, yes, you know, the injustices of this world, so he's going to do something about it so everyone can live in peace and harmony, so therefore he's taking up this political platform, then they'll all think, oh, yes, nice, very good. Because they're materialists, and so they don't mind materialism. Especially if it's broader. It just has to be for everyone. If he's just doing his own thing for himself, now everyone's going to criticize. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. One should not give up anything which can be utilized in the service of the Lord. That is the secret of devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that can be utilized in advancing Krishna consciousness and devotional service should be accepted. For instance, we are using many machines for the advancement of our present Krishna consciousness movement. Machines like typewriters, dictating machines, tape recorders, microphones, and airplanes. Sometimes people ask us, why are you utilizing material products if you condemn the advancement of material civilization? End quote. But actually, we do not condemn. We simply ask people to do whatever they are doing in Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the whole point. People have so much intelligence, so much wealth, so much facility, so much ability.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is not being used in Krishna service. That's what causes all their dissatisfaction and others as well.
Mm-hmm.
If they connect that to Krishna, then it becomes very nice. This is the same principle on which, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna advised Arjuna to utilize his fighting abilities in devotional service. Similarly, we are utilizing these machines for Krishna service. With such sentiment for Krishna, or Krishna consciousness, we can accept everything. If the typewriter can be utilized for advancing our Krishna consciousness movement, we must accept it. Similarly, the dictating machine or any other machine must be used. Our vision is that Krishna is everything. Krishna is the cause and effect, and nothing belongs to us. Krishna's things must be used in the service of Krishna. That is our vision. So our phone does everything except the airplane part, right? I'm sure they're working on it. This does not mean, however, that we should give up the principles of discharging devotional service or neglect abiding by the rules and regulations prescribed therein. In the neophyte stage of devotion, one must follow all the principles regulated by the authority of the spiritual master. The acceptance and rejection of things should always be in pursuance of the devotional principles. Not that one can independently manufacture some idea of what should be accepted or rejected. Mm-hmm. And so that's that we don't manufacture. The spiritual master is the visible manifestation of Krishna. The spiritual master as the visible manifestation of Krishna is necessary. Therefore, to direct the devotee on behalf of the Supreme. Okay. My God. The spiritual master as the visible manifestation of Krishna is necessary. Is necessary, therefore, to direct the devotee on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes. It's a different kind of therefore, right? Yes. So this is necessary, therefore. Or Krishna is necessary, therefore.
Yes.
See? It doesn't work, so. So, it's the same word, the different inflections, it has different meanings. So the same way as in the Vedic grammar. Just English has no grammar for that. But in the Vedas, it's there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami. The two verses are grammatically connected. Bhakher adhi kritasya means contained within the jurisdiction of bhakti scriptures. End quote. Within vairagya, that part which is useless, phalgu, has been rejected as an anga. Right? So, those things that are within that can be engaged in Krishna's service, then that is kept. And anything that can't be used in Krishna's service is going to bring about these, you know, hardening of the heart, attachment to the material world, detachment from things that can be engaged in Krishna's service, you know, properly, yes. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. The two verses, 257 to 58, are connected. By using the definition of pure bhakti, jnana karmadhyana pritam, mentioned in this book, proktena lakshanena, karma with its daily and occasional duties, and jnana with impersonalism have already been rejected as angas of bhakti. That definition has been obtained from scriptures concerning bhakti. Bhakter adi kritasya. Again, in order to make the point about pure bhakti clear, there's another rejection. This time, a phalgu vairagya. Right? So, artificial means renunciation and artificial renunciation. Both have to be given up. Footnote 6. In the phrase, jnana karmadhyana avritam, the commentary explained that adi referred to vairagya, yoga, shankhya, and other processes. That bhakti which is accomplished by dependence on wealth, followers, or other objects cannot be considered as an anga of uttama bhakti because it destroys the pure nature of that bhakti. It is situated far away from uttama bhakti. Right? So, if one's devotional service depends upon these things, right, for you to be absorbed in the Lord, and be then that means it's not an anga of uttama bhakti. You know, pure devotion. It may be connected to devotional service, but it'll be a lower stage. Srila Prabhupada. The spiritual master must never be carried away by an accumulation of wealth or a large number of followers. Bona fide spiritual master will never become like that. But sometimes, if a spiritual master is not properly authorized, and only on his own initiative becomes a spiritual master, he may be carried away by an accumulation of wealth and large numbers of disciples. His is not a very high grade of devotional service. If a person is carried away by such achievements, then his devotional service becomes slackened. One should therefore strictly adhere to the principles of disciplic succession. So one has to see to this. One has is that in, you have it both in the earlier stages. Then you know we're dependent on these things, so it doesn't take on the nature of uttama bhakti. But by practicing devotional service, then by sadhana, then you'll be cleared of these things. But also, as one advances, then the facilities that may come from, if you get distracted, then again it's a problem. Yeah. Right. So in other words, Maya is going to try at either end of the scale. You know, if you don't go for it on this, then she'll try it on that end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It seems that the people must say need a lot of association with advanced devotees.
Yes, yes. Well, there's also probably the idea of those who take it up did not properly authorize.
Yes,
you know, it's
yes.
Just like you see so many Mayavadi gurus and everybody's gurus and. He's got the biggest afro of anybody around. He becomes a guru, or you know that kind of stuff. Then or because his mother said so, he's a guru. You know, so like that. So these kind of things that then they'll get carried away by these things. They get distracted. But at the same time, as we can appreciate ourselves, because the principle applies, is that always to see is that. In the beginning, this, you know, we get enthusiastic, and then sometimes we're very enthusiastic, sometimes not. And then get distracted. Yes, yes, it can be engaged in the Lord's service, but then giving up these things, and this, get all bewildered by these things.
Mm-hmm.
But then, being situated, then also facilities comes, we can get distracted.
Yes. Yes.
Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Among the angas of bhakti, wealth and the other items are generally not needed for hearing and chanting. The excellence of bhakti is destroyed when it depends on wealth and followers. For instance, in deity worship, one person may feel that he cannot perform all the services for the deity at once by himself and thus depend on followers. However, this danger is not present in all angas of bhakti. Right? So in hearing and chanting, that you can do on your own. So that's what he's saying. But these others, you have to be very careful. You're serving the deity, you can do your service. Now they say, no, we want to do this big, it depends on... So that's why one has to be very careful. 1.2.260. Discrimination and other material qualities cannot be considered as angas of uttama bhakti, since on their own they take shelter of the excellent condition of persons practicing uttama bhakti. Right? They take shelter, means someone who's practicing uttama bhakti, they take shelter of them. But it's not that discrimination others are angas of bhakti, because an anga means that, you know, that something that's part of it, that develops it,
mm-hmm.
nourishes it. So it's only devotional discrimination between what is matter and what is spirit. It means what is Krishna conscious, and being absorbed there and avoiding what's not. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That will be useful.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, as we see, is bhakti on its own doesn't require the discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're following what's connected to Krishna, you follow that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? You know, it's just like... there's some sound in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're trying to find this sound.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what do you do? What process do you follow?
We hear,
and just follow. So as it gets, we get closer.
Mm-hmm.
It gets louder. We go that direction. If it's starting to get less
mm-hmm.
loud, we don't. We go back to where it was loud.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to separately discriminate that. Yes, in the closet here, this is not, you know, where the sound is.
Yes.
You just have to
yes.
follow the sound.
Yes.
So
yes.
What inspires bhakti, what develops bhakti, what is giving the taste
yes.
in bhakti, you simply have to follow that.
Yes.
Discrimination is automatically included.
Yes.
You understand the difference here? Because otherwise you're saying, you know, that this discrimination is
yes.
is part, but it's not.
Yes.
Right. So one has to be careful that one shouldn't be dependent upon that.
Yes.
Is that the next sentence? Yeah, that's
the right music and that try to put gyan on bhakti.
Okay. Yes, jnana karma on bhakti. Okay. That's why you always have to be very careful.
Because this can be the tendency, like being used to karma and jnana for a long time.
Yes. That's why it's brought up. Because the natural point of spontaneous devotional service, there's no real problem with that.
Yes.
But if one doesn't have that spontaneous devotional service, then one needs to know that so that you focus. Because otherwise, we'll cultivate these things because they seem that they're nice, they're better, they're good qualities, and it's a more pious position than we were at before. We're only getting to that because of bhakti. Right? But then the difficulty comes up is that we get distracted by them. So we have to understand what is bhakti and what's not. But only so that we will be inspired to accept bhakti.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, because it's the acceptance of the bhakti, that's the bhakti. I'm trying to discriminate based so it serves, it'll help, it'll move us forward. Mm-hmm. But the uttama bhakti doesn't require that discrimination. It's inherent.
Yes.
You can tell it's.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that,
yes.
Yeah. One, two, 260. Okay, we just read that. Right? Then 261. Basic rules of conduct, yama, rules of cleanliness and other actions appear automatically in those who are extremely dedicated to Krishna. Thus they are not included as angas of bhakti. Right? So all these good qualities and all that, they're not encountered as angas of bhakti. They appear automatically in those who are extremely dedicated to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the 26 qualities of the devotee, that's why Prabhupada says, you don't have to practice them separately because they're not angas of bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
It's by devotional service these naturally manifest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, okay, let's say we take potatoes. We put them in the pan with some ghee. Right? If anybody has a problem with that, with some viscous liquid other than 40 weight. Okay? You understand 40 weight? 40 weight's a level of, it's a lighter motor oil. Like in the car, you get 6 to 8, 40 weight, 20 weight, 30 weight, like this. So not that kind.
Yeah.
Ghee is okay. But so you put them in there, and then you follow the process of cooking.
Yes.
So now that these potatoes start taking on a golden color and become a little bit crispy on the outside, is it a separate endeavor? Or do you just follow the process of cooking? And this comes as a natural. So it gets the nice color, it gets the texture, it gets the fragrance, you know, it gets the taste. So we didn't have to take those potatoes and separately try to, you know, paint them golden color or, you know, put some, you know, fragrance on them or something. You know what I'm saying? It's just by the cooking process they come. So therefore, they're not angas of bhakti. They just come along with it. So therefore, basic rules of conduct, yama, rules of cleanliness, other actions appear automatically. So, we're told, do these things for Krishna. Because we're doing it for Krishna, then these things are there.
Yes.
But to try to develop them separately, useless.
Mm.
You know? Make everybody nice, bring everyone together, put the chairs in a circle, all sit around, and talk different things, you know, either nice, pleasant things or, you know, express your anger and rage and let it all out and yell and scream at each other. And after everyone's done it and they've gone around the room, so everyone's had their chance and all that, then everyone goes, oh, that was so nice. Yeah. So you don't have to do those things. You can because of material attachment and all that, but don't call it an anga of bhakti. Right? It's a West Coast thing.
I know.
Yeah. East Coast, they don't do that stuff. That's West Coast. So.
They do everywhere.
Huh? Now everywhere. Yeah, okay, see?
That is their sense of management.
Sit around and yell and scream at each other. Okay. But you can do that anyway. You don't. Why call the meeting and waste time? Everybody sitting at their desk is grumbling about everybody else, and other, you know, so it's already happening. Srila Prabhupada, a Krishna conscious person, being naturally purified, has no need of developing any other purificatory process of thought or action. On account of his being highly elevated in Krishna consciousness, he has already acquired all the good qualities and is following the rules and regulations prescribed for the mystic yoga process. Such rules are automatically practiced by the devotees. A concrete example is the quality of nonviolence, which is considered a good qualification. The devotee is naturally nonviolent and therefore doesn't have to practice nonviolence separately. Some people seek purification by joining a vegetarian movement, but a devotee is automatically a vegetarian. He doesn't need to practice separately in this matter or to join any society for vegetarians. He's automatically a vegetarian.
Was there at that time
Ceylonese Buddhists, they're vegan by philosophy. So it's been there for, thousands of years. So it's always been there. It's just now become a popular thing, a fad thing. But otherwise, but that vegetarian, that's accepted as a religious thing. And you see in the various religions, and they'll accept to some degree or not. I'm not sure about the Judaic or the Islamic. I think they're not so hot on that idea. Mm-hmm. But some Christians do, most don't. You know, the Buddhists, they're most of them are vegetarian. Only the Ceylonese are vegans. Like that. In China, they're kind of vegan just because they don't do well with dairy products. But, you know, take the same person out of China where they're exposed to it, then they're fine. Yeah. So, yes.
Christians, when they fast from meat.
They fast from meat, yes. Yeah, it's always considered a piety. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Festival of Lent.
Lent.
Okay.
So they have that. That's their Kartik. Everyone has their Kartik. Like that. You know. Okay. There are many other instances showing that a devotee needn't practice anything but Krishna consciousness. All the good qualities of the demigods automatically develop within him. Those who are intentionally practicing to be vegetarians or to become nonviolent may have good qualifications by material estimation, but these qualifications are not sufficient to make them devotees. Otherwise, all vegetarians would be devotees. A vegetarian is not necessarily a devotee, nor is a nonviolent person, right, automatically a devotee. But a devotee is automatically both vegetarian and nonviolent. We must conclude, therefore, that vegetarianism or nonviolence is not the cause of devotion, right? So it's not an anga of bhakti. Bhakti naturally develops these things. So you simply have to follow what the acharyas give, and that will develop all the good qualities. So we're judging, okay, if it's favorable for service, then we'll either have more things, less things, you know, whatever it is that we're doing. It's just what is within what's recommended. So if that works for you, it's favorable, then you do that. If you're comfortable, then it works. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki. Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada.